Alrighty. Well, if everybody's ready, pull up your jock straps and let's get to it. Am I right?
I'm so ready. I have a jock strap wedgie.
Alright. Well, here goes nothing. What's going on, folks? Welcome to episode 3 of the Next Man Up Injury Podcast. I am your host, Kyle Allen. I am joined once again by the talented duo of Matthew Walters and Eric Crail. Before we jump into the NFC West, Matthew brought up something interesting in our group chat that we all agreed we could talk about because it's pertinent to sports medicine and our bubble of expertise, if you will. So recently in sporting news, you may have heard about the Lakers. They have decided to part ways with their head athletic trainer, Nina Shea. They did not renew her contract after they had a season marred with injuries. Both LeBron James and Anthony Davis played in a career low number of games this season, and not one player on the team's roster played the full 72 games. Now, Matthew, you were an athletic trainer. What are your thoughts on this?
I do want to start out and say the Lakers as a franchise can do whatever they want. It's their right to do that, whatever. However, this really rubbed me the wrong way as an athletic trainer, because one, basically they threw her under the bus and said, you're the reason for all our injuries this year, when she's been with the organization since 2008. She's been an assistant with the Lakers at least since 2016, and has been the head athletic trainer the past 2 years since 2019. For me, it's basically saying, well, we had all these injuries and we didn't go far in the playoffs, and you're the reason why, so you gotta go. When she just helped them win the championship the past year when they were in the bubble dealing with COVID and all that. So that's kind of my two cents on it. I would love to hear what you guys think, but like I said, it just kind of really irked me that they're just kind of throwing her under the bus, especially when she had been with the franchise so long.
Yeah, you make some excellent points. Eric, what do you think about this before I give my piece?
Well, I think that her tenure there is really meaningful because through the years with the team, you should have enough data points to really decide, you know, is our team chronically injured or was this kind of a one-off with a goofy 2020 leading up to it? So, I mean, I probably know the least amount about this situation, but you would hope that this decision wasn't made mostly out of a scapegoat. But I feel like athletic trainers, they have one of the toughest jobs in sports from the professional standpoint, non-athlete standpoint, where you're almost doomed if you do and you're doomed if you don't. You know, I think of Kevin Durant playing for the Golden State Warriors in that championship game where he was having a hard time getting onto the court. They weren't sure if he was going to be able to play. And the athletic trainers, they did such a good job at relieving his calf tightness that they actually removed his body's protective mechanism. And he ended up tearing his Achilles in that game. You know, from the trainer's perspective, it's like, you know, I need to get this athlete onto the court so that my team can compete. But sometimes if you do that, it's ends up in a catastrophic, you know, result and can really derail a career.
Yeah, there's absolutely a part of that job that requires you to protect the athletes. People that are listening out there that are athletes will certainly understand you're an athlete because you enjoy the game and you want to play the game. So obviously, the last thing you want is to be injured, not be able to go out and play the game that you enjoy and be able to help your team out, especially high caliber players like LeBron, KD, Anthony Davis, not being able to play, that crushes them. But it's also the athletic trainer's job to protect them from further hurting themselves.
Eric is completely right, but the only other thing I would say is that at that level especially, it's not just the athletic trainers making that decision. Obviously, they're a professional athlete. They go into it. There's tons of doctors over the athletic trainers that are helping make that decision. Well, I don't want to get into conspiracy theory area or anything, because obviously, I don't know. Maybe they just decided to part ways, but it just doesn't seem like that to me. But it's not just Nina that was making the decisions on when these athletes return to play and that nature of it.
Yeah, absolutely not. And outside of the NBA, in this specific case, you have teams like the Dallas Cowboys where you have Jerry Jones all the time talking about, oh yeah, this player is going to play this week. And so you know that those athletic trainers and doctors and the people that have to clear the players, they're getting some pressure from the people that hire them and sign their paychecks. So they've certainly got some added pressure there. The way I look at all of this is because the Lakers played all the way through the playoffs and ultimately won the finals last season, and the season ran later than ever due to COVID, they had the shortest offseason in the history of the NBA. And I highlighted before in an article before last year's NFL season that rapid increases in workload and lack of appropriate recovery time can lead to increased risk for injury. And whether you look at it as anecdotal or not, I mean, this season was evidence of that in LA.
True that. And am I wrong in remembering that LeBron James was asking for more rest time and trying to take games off?
Yeah, he was highlighted at the beginning of the year, or maybe even before the season started, talking about how ridiculous it was that this offseason was so short that they didn't have enough time to recover from the season before, and that there was the potential risk for more injuries this season, not just for himself, but across the league. He raised concerns for the players, and obviously the NBA didn't take that into consideration as well.
Oh, for sure, because COVID, they delayed everything, and now all of a sudden, instead of, I don't even know how long they usually get, but instead of 4 months off, you're only getting, especially at that the end there, I mean, a month and a half, maybe 2 months at most.
Yep, and the playoff teams get the shorter rest too, so you have to consider them. They won the finals, so obviously they played to the farthest extent of the season.
Exactly.
And they were one of the first games of the year, so they had the shortest. Well, let's get back into our wheelhouse and talk about some NFL news. Last time we got together, we waded through some fantasy-relevant injury news in the NFC East. While the division itself was prosaic at best, it's home to some of the top fantasy talents in the league. If you want to listen to that before we jump into the NFC West today, you can check it out anywhere that you listen to podcasts, or you can find the link on rideordynasty.com under the podcast tab. As you may have already gathered, we're going to take a walk through each division's most fantasy-relevant injuries from last year, break down how those injuries may affect the fantasy landscape moving forward. For the sake of organization, we're going to go again in the order of the teams finish last season. So kicking it off for the NFC West, we have the Seattle Seahawks. Now, I need to preface talking about Seattle with this. Pete Carroll is one of the more difficult coaches to garner information from, but not for the same reasons as Matt Patricia or Bill Belichick. Pete Carroll is serially optimistic about predicting injury status. He will be the first guy to say, oh yeah, that player looked great. You know, he should be ready to go. He's almost there. Anytime I hear that out of Pete Carroll's mouth, I'm like, all right, they're either going to play like 3 snaps this week and be totally unreliable, or they're not quite ready yet. So any optimism I hear out of Pete Carroll's mouth, I take with a grain of salt. So we'll kick it off. We'll talk about Rashad Penny, the perennially... It seems perennially injured running back. He was finally back last December. About a year removed from injury, he didn't really do a lot. Seattle chose not to pick up his option, and he even had a cleanup procedure this offseason. According to Pete Carroll, he's not quite ready to be out there where he's reacting yet. So if Pete Carroll, the serial optimist, is not excited about a player being ready to play, that kind of gives me some worry. So I have 2 questions for this one, Eric. I'm going to come to you. What is the significance of this clean-out procedure, first of all? Is there scar tissue? Does this mean there was a failed previous surgery? And will Penny ever be healthy enough to garner fantasy relevance?
A clean-out procedure is a minimally invasive surgery that can be used when doctors aren't quite sure why you're having knee pain. They'll often make small cuts in the front of your knee, and they'll insert a camera and a shaving tool, and they'll literally clean out anything that they deem irregular on the spot. So it can be, you know, a very small procedure or a somewhat larger procedure, depending on what they see when they get in there. But remember that AJ Brown, he had a similar procedure done on both of his knees this offseason as well. So, you know, we're not being doomsday with him. But I think it's pretty significant that Rashad Penny is trying to recover from a significant knee injury, and he's having more and more procedures. Did that answer the question? I can't remember what you asked.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. So really what it comes down to is there could be something like bone spurs, there could be scar tissue in there, stuff that's causing not necessarily pain or limiting mobility, but it could be just a discomfort thing. They go in, clean it out so they can be ready to go in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't really call it a positive or negative sign, except when you really zoom out and you look at his injury history and the fact that he's not quite ready for reacting, which basically means live play. And it's June. It's late June. You know, really, you want Rashad Penny to be ready by now so that when proper OTAs and off-season training begins, he'll be ready for the season.
Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you. So my second question to that, do you feel like Penny is ever really going to be healthy enough to garner fantasy relevance?
Well, in terms of his health, I'm not overly optimistic, no matter how hard I want to be. You know, in the last episodes, we read between the lines when we were assessing Saquon Barkley's knee recovery, and we acknowledged that the Giants front office picking up his fifth year option is a good indicator that the conversations between those guys and the doctors was an optimistic one. And we can do the same with Rashad Penny. And we're acknowledging that his option wasn't picked up. And, you know, we start to think how those insider conversations went with their medical staff. So to me, that's not a good sign of the team's optimism. And they know way more than we do looking from the outside in. I mean, both running backs were drafted in the first round. So for a team to accept a sunk cost by letting Penny walk is a pretty bad sign, in my opinion. From a clinical standpoint, his injury history just feels more and more familiar to guys like Darius Geis and Bryce Love. So I don't have high hopes for Rashad Penny, but anything's possible in the NFL.
Moving forward to the wide receiver room in Seattle, we have rookie Dwayne Eskridge. So he's an interesting player who played both wide receiver and defensive back at Western Michigan, but he'll be a full-time receiver in the NFL, and he actually stands a chance to fit in as the number three receiver there. With three separate injuries over the course of five college seasons, Matthew, and now an injury before training camp to his toe, do we have injury concerns for a rookie receiver that's already 24 years old?
Yeah, there might be some concern there. Obviously, he had the history in college, and then he's already dealing with a toe injury, and it's not even they're not even in full pads and actually hitting each other yet. It's June. They're just working through the playbook. Now, I tried to find which toe was actually injured. Like, if this is like a turf toe situation that we've discussed, like with Antonio Gibson in the past, or did he just stub his pinky toe on his door frame or something like that? And I couldn't find any information on which toe is actually injured or how he injured it or anything like that. So it's kind of pure speculation on what we're dealing with. But if it is a turf toe injury, there is a very real possibility that this will be bothering him into training camp and going into the season. Not necessarily, but we've seen reports of Antonio Gibson's turf toes apparently still giving him a little bit of trouble. Now, I did see a report that he's already jogging and catching passes in camp, so maybe they're just being a little overly cautious with it, which would be kind of where my brain is at with it, that he probably just dealing with a small sprain in one of his toes and they're just being cautious.
Well, Seattle definitely has the wide receiver room talent to be able to be cautious with their rookie and nurse him along. Hopefully they take care of him and get him fully healthy before they try to push him out. Moving across the division to Los Angeles and the Rams. Now we've got some interesting ones here. We're going to start off with wide receiver Cooper Kupp. Now you may remember last year that he had some knee issues, and they didn't really clarify on what they were because it was actually kind of a rare injury. It was initially believed that it was his knee bursitis acting up again, which he has a history of, but what it actually was, he talked about this offseason, was a Morel Lavallee lesion, which is a very fancy word for a degloving injury, which occurs when the skin is essentially separated from the underlying tissue. So the skin separates from the fat or muscle tissues, and it causes the growth of necrotic fat or dying tissue, as well as an effusion, which is a fluid-filled area. So these injuries, they look horrible. It looks like a giant, puffy, fluid-filled bruise almost. With his history of knee bursitis that kept him out of the playoffs last season, isn't unreasonable to expect something like this to come up. With something this rare, it is likely to reoccur. Will Kupp be fully recovered for the season, Eric?
With a degloving injury, it's pretty nasty, but it's total happenstance and could theoretically happen to anyone playing a contact sport. The real challenge with an injury like this is just dealing with it the right way in its acute phases. So I think I read that he had like 12 to 15 needles inserted into that knee, And what they were trying to do was take the excess fluid out of the area. And often you'll get a compression bandage after the fact. But if you mishandle it in those early stages, then yes, you could technically get rotting of his fat cells from within, which is a much more serious issue. So it makes sense that they had to be conservative, you know, in that time frame. But long term, there's no more chance that he gets this again than the next NFL player. And it's not something that I would be worried about for 2021 and beyond.
Well, that's certainly good to know. I would say that his knee bursitis is more of a concern moving forward, but with them extending both him and Robert Woods, I believe that the Rams athletic training staff is confident in his ability to be there for him.
Absolutely.
And if you're curious and you have a strong stomach and you want to look up some degloving injuries, look up ring avulsions.
Don't do it.
Moving on to the newly appointed king of Los Angeles. Well, maybe not quite yet, but offensive genius, shout out to Don, offensive genius Sean McVay thinks very highly of Matthew Stafford. On the last episode, we talked about Daniel Jones' toughness and his ability to play through injury. But Matthew Stafford is a different breed when it comes to toughness. In an interview with the Detroit Free Press, he listed off some of his injuries from 2020. Hear me out here. He had a partially torn UCL in his right thumb on his throwing hand. He had a torn UCL in his left elbow on the second to last play of the game against Houston that nobody really knew about. That's because he was wearing a sleeve on his left arm from then on out, so you couldn't see how much tape was holding his arm together, essentially. He also broke some cartilage in his eighth rib against Green Bay. He, quote, tore something in the back of his left knee and then had a subtalar right ankle sprain to close out the season. Not a bad year for his orthopedic surgeon. So we covered our thoughts on battling through injury in the last episode. To avoid beleaguering that point, let's talk specifically about Matthew Stafford. At 33 years old, coming off of a laundry list of separate injuries, which ones are you most concerned about for 2021 and beyond, Matthew?
It's hard to pick one to be most concerned about, but I would probably say his thumb UCL, just because that is his throwing side and that's, you know, you have to grip the ball. That's going to cause trouble with that. Now, I will say Matthew Stafford is a tough son of a gun, and he's been that way his whole career. But as we've discussed before, maybe that's a hindrance in the fantasy realm sometime, as he only finished QB16 last year. Now, he did play all 16 games, even with all those injuries. And he's actually only 3 of his seasons has he missed time. So only 3 seasons in his career has he missed any time. Every other season he's played all 16 games. So he's going to play through injuries. And I actually want to read a quote from him on kind of his mentality about this, because they were asking him about this, and I believe it was from that same interview. But and he said, and this is about the kind of the people of Detroit and why he was playing through so many injuries. He said, for them, it's not injuries on their hands and ankles and ribs. It's where am I going to get money to pay the mortgage and how am I going to get my car from here to there? So Matthew Stafford kind of realizes that people are watching sports to take their mind off their day-to-day lives and the struggles they might be going through. And he kind of sees it onto himself to play through stuff in order to entertain people and, you know, to have them something to watch on Sundays and take their mind off of life.
If there's any question about Matthew Stafford's character, I think it would be right up there with his work ethic and his toughness. He is a top-notch dude. Our next squad we're going to discuss is the Arizona Cardinals. Now, Coach Cliff Kingsbury says that they came out of rookie camp and minicamp unscathed. He stated, I felt like guys were healthy. We had some good work, but we were able to avoid any of that stuff, which is excellent news for the Cardinals. So with a lack of current news in Arizona, let's have a little fun with this one and talk about AJ Green. Now, I want to hear from both of you on this one, so be ready. My first question for you, just off the cuff, yes or no, are you in or out on AJ Green in Arizona this season? Eric?
Sort of. I'm in on him at the right price. Really, for me, it's just I think that his potential ceiling for the occasional spike weeks is enough for me to do a dice roll, but you know that investment for me can't be very high.
more of a best ball buy for you.
Oh, absolutely.
Matthew, what do you think?
I'm with Eric on it. If you're taking him super late in a draft, then sure, go for it. There's an off chance he returns to form a little bit and maybe does something for your fantasy team. However, I'm not holding my breath for it. It's been like 3 years removed since his last real fantasy relevant season, and he actually played all 16 games last year and basically did nothing with it. So there's a chance, but I wouldn't count on it.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what he can do with Kyler Murray, but also opposite DeAndre Hopkins. That's a very, very, very good, although aging, very good receiver tandem in Arizona. Now, my next question on this, we'll go to you first, Matthew. We'll swap it up. Can AJ Green pull a Blake Griffin, just make a total 180 from being constantly hurt and struggling to being a viable weapon for this offense?
It kind of goes into the nature of the sport, because Blake Griffin really changed how he played the game and became not quite as an explosive of a player. Whereas as a wide receiver in the NFL, you definitely still need to be able to be explosive and go make plays. And I'm not sold AJ Green can actually do that. Now, like I said, there's always a chance that something crazy happens and, you know, he returns to form and catches lightning in a bottle. But I'm not holding my breath for it.
Eric, what do you say? Are the days of elite AJ Green gone?
Yeah, I think so. His last real productive season was 3 years ago, and you loved him for those games, but that was 3 years ago. And he's really been hampered by injuries since then. I think when it comes down to for me is that he's 32. So he's in that age range for wide receivers where you really have to be an elite physical talent to continue to produce. And a part of that production happens by staying healthy. So as an older guy, I'm not sure he'll be able to do that. You know, that's where it comes down to that dice roll for me. I mean, how much are you willing to invest in the occasional spike week if he might not even play half the season?
Yeah, those are both excellent points. I can't argue with you on that. All right, so just quick hitters right here. We'll go Eric, then Matthew on all of them. So you can choose one of these two players, and there's a list of four. All of these receivers are within five spots in PPR ADP. AJ Green or Nelson Agholor?
AJ Green, hands down.
Matthew?
I would probably take Agholor.
Eric, AJ Green or Paris Campbell?
AJ Green, hands down.
Matthew?
I would take AJ Green.
Eric, Emmanuel Sanders or AJ Green?
AJ Green, hands down.
AJ Green.
He's sold. Matthew's going AJ as well. All right. And here's the fun one. And I was very curious to see where they ended up ADP wise. And they are within five spots of each other. His teammate, Christian Kirk or AJ Green? Eric?
AJ Green. And for me, it really comes down to Christian Kirk's lack of ability to produce the way that we've wanted him to. You know, asking the question, why did the team bring on AJ Green? And I think it's because they want somebody to be a playmaker, and they just haven't gotten that in Christian Kirk consistently.
Yeah, I'm taking AJ Green over Christian Kirk.
So within five spots, either above or below AJ Green, you've got guys like Agholor, Campbell, Sanders, and Kirk, and it sounds like you guys are both in on AJ Green at his ADP. So it'll be interesting to see where he is going in both Dynasty and Redraft this season. Now moving forward to the final team, the lowly San Francisco 49ers. Now, the 49ers are one of my favorites this year to make kind of a worst-to-first kind of run. They were mauled by injuries this season, so hopefully they can turn it around on that front. Now, we'll start off with the QB, Jimmy Garoppolo. Now, he's obviously had an ACL tear in the past, and now he went out this season with high ankle sprain issues. He suffered one in week two, returned weeks 5 through 8, but he didn't really look great. And then he went to the IR for the rest of the season after saying that the injury flared up again. Keep in mind, the 49ers traded up to take Trey Lance, Eric, with the 3rd overall pick. Will Jimmy G's injury history take Lance to be the favorite to start the season? Or do you believe that he should be healthy enough to at least start as the QB1 and maybe we see Lance filter in later on?
I firmly believe that Garopp will start the season, or if he doesn't, it won't be because of his health. What he suffered last year was the kind of injury that it can be really difficult to manage in season, and he couldn't do it, but he's had plenty of time to rehab and strengthen since then. I'm not optimistic about his ability to keep Trey Lance off the bench all season, but that opinion has nothing to do with his health.
If he's healthy enough, I think we'll be looking at kind of the Ryan Fitzpatrick to a situation all over again and another team, you know, the
I like that.
Kind of veteran guy, plays a few weeks, and then eventually the coaches are like, all right, we got to get the young guy in there and see what he can do.
Yeah.
I don't know that Jimmy G is going to be the same closer kind of player later on in the season like Fitzpatrick did with the back and forth kind of stuff. But I can see a situation like you're saying where he plays a few weeks and then they're like, all right, let's see what Lance has.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
Nobody
with that.
Can be Fitzmagic.
Nobody.
Garoppa magic doesn't quite roll off the tongue.
Garoppa poltergeist? I don't know. Anywho. Matthew, let's talk about Jeff Wilson Jr. Unfortunately, he tore his meniscus in the locker room this offseason after a weightlifting session at the 49ers facility. Let's get an update. What's his current status and when can we expect him to be back?
His current status is getting surgery to fix the meniscus tear. I've heard reports of about 4 months, which isn't great because we're already going to be in the season at that point. Luckily, he did tear it at the facility because there's been some players on other teams that have gotten injuries away from the facilities due to COVID, and they're basically, teams are saying, well, we're not taking care of it. You're on your own with it. That's good news, I guess. Yeah, he tore it in the locker room standing up and twisted too fast, and I guess his meniscus decided it didn't like that movement. So that's a little crazy on that part. It's not looking good for Jeff Wilson's fantasy football future. They did draft Trey Sermon, which I'm not a big believer in Trey Sermon, but they did draft him. He is going to get some playing time, and we'll see what happens. They have Mostert. They signed Wayne Gallman. They still have Jamichael Hasty, however you feel about him. So it's a crowded running back room already, and now you're having an injury that you're not even going to be playing at the beginning of the year. They're going to be finding their rotations. It's not looking good for Jeff Wilson from a fantasy standpoint. Health-wise, he should fully recover and not have any issue.
Yeah, and listing those other RBs, you kind of filled in my follow-up question I was going to have for you. And our good friend Rob Mongol might have some choice words for you with the Trey Sermon take there. But if you had to pick one of them in the spirit of the next man up, who would be the first in line for the most RB work in San Francisco?
In the immediate future, I would say Mostert.
I like it.
But there is a chance Trey Sermon gets worked in and proves me a complete fool for all my takes this offseason.
It's always fun to see what happens with the rookie running backs, but I can absolutely see a world where Raheem Mostert's the early down guy. He's catching a lot of passes out of the backfield, and then Trey Sermon's coming in being that big body back that's just getting a few yards for the first downs and touchdowns and sapping some of that value away from Mostert. But it will certainly be a fun RB room to watch as they rotate a lot. Now, speaking of another running back, wait, Deebo Samuel is a wide receiver. Excuse me. So, Eric, let's talk about Deebo Samuel. So, Deebo Samuel, as we all know, suffered a Jones fracture in the offseason last year. He had various soft tissue injuries throughout the season, and he has a noted history of soft tissue injuries prior to that. So, what do we do with Deebo? Does his history automatically get baked into his ADP at this point, or are we back on board with the Deebo train?
I'm extremely cautious of Deebo Samuel in 2021. His injury history has to be a consideration when you put him into your starting lineup. Repeated hamstring strains, depending on severity, and he's had some bad ones, can result in permanent changes to that tissue that just make it so difficult to fully recover from year after year. So, I mean, when he's healthy, he's a yak monster and will compete for targets on a typically fantasy-friendly offense. But I would strongly consider what other options you have before just auto-plugging him in this coming year.
I drafted him last year with high hopes, and then as the year dwindled on, my hopes also dwindled.
Sorry, buddy.
It happens. Before we close out Deebo Samuel, though, I have to give a shout out to friend of Rider Dynasty and personal friend of mine, Santiago Casanova, who brought me a fantastic statistic, but also kind of proved me wrong on Twitter, but no harsh feelings. So Deebo Samuel was the most fantasy relevant receiver, I'll abridge my quote before, to have more yards after catch than total receiving yards this season. The other one, the fantasy not quite elite Ray Ray McLeod. Moving on.
Amazing.
To talk about our last player on the 49ers, George Kittle. Now, he suffered an MCL sprain as well as a foot fracture in 2020 that kept him out for the majority of the season. Unfortunately, he does have a history of injuries to his foot, ankle, shoulder, knee, and hamstring at this point in his career. We've talked about him before with shoulder injuries and talked about other tight ends. But there's no doubt that Kittle is the type of player that will do everything that he can to persevere through his setbacks and try to play through injury. So Matthew, my question to you is, after a full offseason to rehab and strengthen those injuries from last year, will Kittle return to the elite level of tight end production that he once shared with Travis Kelce, or are we knocking him down a few spots?
I have no doubt that he's going to return to form and be rehabbed from everything and have the strength to go out there and ball out. Now, with how he plays, there's very good chance that he gets injured again, but as you mentioned, he's a guy that's he's going to try to play through whatever he can. Last year was the only time that he missed significant time, and that was with the foot fracture mostly. And most guys would have hung up the season, but he came back and played the last game or two and to show that he could do it. Now, he has played in 53 out of the 64 games that he could have, so he does miss sometimes, but most of that was from last year with the kind of freak fracture in his foot. He's played through a groin strain, he's played through knee sprains, he had an ankle fracture that he only missed two games for. The dude is tough, and he's been shown to be able to produce with injury too. I know that we've mentioned people going out there and not balling out when they're trying to play through injuries, but Kittle's kind of proven that it don't really matter if he's injured. If he's out there, you're playing him.
With a player like George Kittle, it can be frustrating to say, well, if he's playing, I've got to start him, because he does have those weeks more often than not where he goes off. And especially for those of us that are dynasty players and play in tight end premium leagues, it's hard to ignore a player like George Kittle when he's on the field. Well, folks, that does it for the NFC West in this episode of The Next Man Up. Next time we meet up, we'll be discussing the NFC North and what is to be expected in 2021 from the Packers, Bears, Vikings, and Lions. As always, we're going to close it out with social tags. Matthew, where can we find you?
So you can find me mostly on Twitter at FantasyFerret. That's my fantasy football account that I like to spend most of my time on.
And Eric, where can the listeners look for you?
Yep, you guys can find me on Twitter at FFNighthawk.
Thanks, guys. And before I sign off, we need to give a big shout out to a personal friend of mine and friend of the podcast, John C., for creating all of our intro and outro music. You hear that sweet beat behind me? That's his work. If you're looking for music for your podcast, videos, or just need to hear some sweet tunes, you can reach him at johncmusic@gmail.com. That's johnseemusic@gmail.com. And again, my name is Kyle Allen. You can find me on Twitter at kallen_4. Don't forget to check out riderdynasty.com for the latest from our tremendous team of writers. And give us a follow while you're there on Twitter at @RideOrDynasty. And one last thing before we go, always remember that the best ability is availability. Peace.